Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name's James Henderson, and I'm chairman of the GAS programme. And I'd just like to introduce what is actually the first in a new series of podcasts that we're going to record on a regular basis to discuss the implications of the Russia-Ukraine crisis on energy markets. Today, we're going to talk about gas, and I'm delighted to have with me three colleagues from OIES, Mike Forward, Jack Sharples, and Agnieszka Asson. And we're going to talk about markets and volumes to start with, and then we're going to move on to the latest real topic in Europe, and that's the Russian demand for ruble pricing of gas sales. But we'll come on to that a little bit later. So, Mike, let me come to you first, if I may. Can you give us a little update from the past week or so on what's been happening in the markets, where we are with prices, and what have been the key drivers?
Yes, thank you, Jim. Well, really, so if we go back a little bit, obviously the run-up in prices in 2021 we're all now familiar with. We've done enough on that in the past. The market tightened, kind of settled down a little bit in January and February, and despite the lower Russian flows, which Jack will talk about. But obviously with the invasion of Ukraine, yeah, the market went into wild gyrations, basically, and prices sort of shot up enormously, then shot back down again, and have obviously been very volatile because of the uncertainty. I think we'll come on maybe later in the podcast to sort of a lot of the physical drivers, but I think the what's been driving the price volatility and the sort of spikes in prices is this the huge uncertainty. We've always said there's a lot of froth in the market. But any sort of statement, whether it's Europe saying it wants to reduce Russian imports by 2/3, or Putin saying, well, I cut off the gas, or the ruble payment issue, any sort of rumour or news sort of just spikes the prices and then things sort of calm back down. I think without that, I think we'll come back to this, that prices actually could be half today's levels if we didn't have this uncertainty about the Russian flows. Maybe we'll come back to the reasons for that as we get into the podcast later.
Sure, we should probably say that we're recording this on the 4th of April, given that you mentioned today's prices, and we should probably tell people what the price today is. So perhaps you could just do that as well.
I think it was, in euros, it was off a little bit this morning, about 108, 110 euros. I think it closed at, per megawatt hour, sort of closed at 5 or 6 euros higher than that on Friday. But that's a lot lower than the over 200 euros we saw in the immediate aftermath of the invasion. So prices have sort of settled down, but are sort of bumping up and down depending on what a politician says from time to time.
So what are the key issues in terms of the volatility at the moment? Obviously, the mention of ruble pricing, which we'll come on to later, but also, I mean, is weather having an impact at all? Is that having much to do with pricing anymore?
It does. It sort of helps. Weather and the wind, I think, is the two issues. If it's obviously it's been warmer in Europe in the last couple of weeks, which has taken some of the strain off, and we've seen that in the storage fees, which Jack will talk about. But also, if it gets windier, then we need less gas in power. So, but that's more, I would say, little increments or decrements to the price, as opposed to somebody coming out and saying we won't get paid in rubles, and the price sort of skyrockets briefly before coming back down. So the weather has little movements in the prices, whereas the statements by politicians and governments seems to have a much greater impact, at least briefly, on the price.
Okay, well, look, you've mentioned the fundamentals. Let's talk a little bit about those fundamentals. Jack, let me turn to you now and give us an update on flows of gas from Russia, because obviously the big concern is they're going to get cut off. But what's actually happening at the moment and over the last week?
To give a bit of context, we had a substantial dip in flows in January and February. Just to put some numbers on that, the monthly average flow of Russian gas to Europe, excluding Turkey, was about 360 million cubic meters per day in December. That dipped to about 240 in January and then recovered somewhat to 290 in February, and then finally made its way back up to 340 in March. So really the big dip came in January, in the first 3 weeks of February, when Russia launched its invasion of Ukraine, we actually saw nominations, well, we saw the physical flow of Russian gas to Europe jump significantly in the immediate aftermath of that. And what we think has happened is effectively, as a result of that invasion, prompt prices on European hubs rose, which put them above long-term contract prices. And so as a result, Gazprom's European counterparties started nominating higher volumes under their long-term contracts. And so that dragged more Russian gas through those pipelines.
And of course, we've seen some anomalies. I mean, you talk about nominating more, but I mean, we've seen some anomalous events, haven't we, in the past week. I mean, there was the one day or even longer than that when the Yamal pipeline just appeared to be completely empty. There were no flows in either direction. What do you think caused that?
Well, I think what has been happening here is that it's really German counterparties and their nominations that are driving those flows along the Yamal Europe pipeline. The amount that Gazprom provides to the Polish market has been, via that route, has been relatively consistent at about 0.5 BCM per month. Although what is interesting is that under normal operation, you have the Yamal pipeline running from east to west, and the difference between Kondratki on the Belarus Poland border and Malnov on the Germany-Poland border, that delta is what stays in the Polish market. But as you say, actually, on certain days, we've seen a physical flow from Germany back into Poland. Now, that might be Gazprom making use of any spare capacity that it has on the Nord Stream pipeline when nominations in Germany decline, or it might be German traders selling into the Polish market and actually physically moving volumes in that direction. But certainly it is, as you say, a bit of an anomaly.
Okay, and if we look at volumes for March, you've said that they were better. I mean, January, February were really the downside for Q1. If we look forward, I mean, if March volumes, you know, were extrapolated for the year as a whole, we're still down quite significantly. Are we not for Russian volumes?
We are, yes. And actually, as you mentioned, some of these anomalies, even within March, actually on the 14th and 15th of March, the volumes dropped off. They then fell back to about 300 million cubic meters per day and then recovered again back to almost 360 million cubic meters a day by the end of the month. So it's even within March been a little bit up and down. But what's notable is that even when that high of about 360 to maybe 365 million cubic meters a day was hit at times in March, that was still markedly below where we were in 2021. So even if we maintain this present level and track that trend, if you like, we're still going to end up with less Russian gas coming to Europe every month than we did this time last year.
Okay, well, so obviously we need to replace that. And I mean, Mike, you've written about LNG, global LNG supply, and how that is, you know, one solution. And in fact, the EU and both the IEU and IEA are looking at for it to be, you know, the main solution to the Russian gas import problem. What's the current state of play in LNG supply globally?
Well, I think actually the market is relatively healthy, certainly in terms of the amount of LNG that's available for Europe. I mean, rather uniquely, for the first time in almost since records began, look at LNG demand outside Europe, obviously dominated by Asia. In the first 3 months, that's about 9 BCM lower than the first 3 months of 2021. Clearly, the cold weather played a part in 2021, but normally Asian demand just continues to grow, especially driven by China. So that's taken a lot of the sort of heat out of the market. At the same time, we're seeing an increase in what we call available energy capacity or supply, and that's sort of 5-6 BCM higher this quarter, the first quarter of this year, than the first quarter of last year. As a consequence, there's been a lot of LNG available for Europe, but Europe's kind of needed it because Russia's sending less gas to Europe, even though European demand's a bit weaker. So including Turkey, then European energy imports are up 17 billion cubic metres this year compared to last year. Turkey's about 2.5 of that. So, you know, we're looking at 14, 15 billion cubic metres higher for the sort of rest of Europe, excluding Turkey. And obviously Europe's needed it because of the lower Russia pipe imports. But the supply situation actually, is, in my view, is sort of relatively healthy at the moment. It's kind of been masked by what's going on with Russia and Ukraine.
And is that looking sustainable for the rest of the year?
Well, it gets better. I mean, there's obviously on the demand side, expect Asia demand to pick up, especially in China. I think on the rest of Asia, maybe Japan, Korea down a little bit. Southeast Asia probably up, but it started raining in Brazil, so the demand there could be less for the rest of this year than it was last year. So demand will rise outside Europe as opposed to declining. But on the supply side, I mean, the increase in supply we've seen doesn't really include to any great extent the Sabine Pass, Train 6 and Calcasieu Pass coming on in the US, and some of the unwindings of some of the constraints from last year, you know, Norway coming back on, Prelude apparently is sort of starting up again. So the supply situation actually, in our view, partly because of the unwinding of supply issues, is looking a lot rosier. So Europe to get another 20 to 30 BCM of LNG this year compared to last year looks a fairly easy target to meet. Anything above that, you're a bit constrained because of demand elsewhere, but Europe should see a lot more LNG this year and already has.
Okay, and part of that LNG is this promise from the US to send us 15 billion cubic metres more this year. How do you interpret that? What does that actually mean, and can it be achieved?
I have absolutely no idea what it means. I mean, it's 15% more compared to what? Compared to last year, we're already there, you know. There's probably 15 BCM more coming in the first 3 months than last year. 15 BCM compared to what it would otherwise be. I mean, who knows? It's just one of these politician statements, which is, to be honest, pretty meaningless.
But and essentially, I guess the other thing is that politicians can promise all they like, but ultimately the market will decide. But the market is currently, I mean, the prices in Europe obviously are dragging the gas across the Atlantic rather than seeing it going across the Pacific.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the, you know, the European price is attracting the gas. And the other thing about US LNG, of course, is if it comes to Europe, in terms of the shipping capacity, you effectively double the shipping capacity because it takes the round trip to Europe is half the time it takes to get to Japan. So it does ease that constraint a little bit. So yeah, Europe's a very, very attractive market for US LNG and probably will continue to be so for the rest of the year. So 15 BCM, I think it's already happened, basically, compared to last year, if that's what they meant, yeah.
Great. All right. Well, thanks. So Jack, I mean, let me turn back to you. We've got this LNG arriving then to make up for the lower Russian volumes. I'm hoping you're going to tell me that the storage situation has improved somewhat from when we last discussed it a month or so ago. So where are we with storage in Europe?
Well, I do indeed have good news for you compared to when we last spoke. The storage situation is definitely looking healthier than it did previously. To put a number on it, we have about 27 BCM in European storage. The end of winter figure has been helped by the fact that storage withdrawals effectively flatlined to zero in the second half of March. So that meant that we had a little bit more in storage at the end of the winter than we had previously thought that we might. Just to come back to Mike's point about how we saw potentially 14 to 15 BCM more LNG coming into Europe, to link that back to storage, Gazprom's withdrawals from its European storage capacity that it holds was about 4 BCM more than it was in the previous year. They've effectively drawn out storage and not replenished it, or rather it was withdrawals from storage were 4 BCM higher, in Q1 last year than they were this year, just by Gazprom. So it means that actually, if you add that to the fact that Gazprom's pipeline supplies to Europe were about 11 BCM lower in Q1 22 than they were 12 months earlier, the effective amount of gas delivered by Gazprom to its European counterparties was about 15 BCM less. So actually, that pretty well matches up with the additional LNG volumes that Mike has been discussing. In terms of where we sit now in storage, we are pretty much exactly where we were on the 1st of April 2017. And we're about 9 BCM better off than we were in the aftermath of the Beast from the East in 2018. And we are indeed just 5 BCM short of where we were this time last year. So it's really not a terrible situation. I think the storage target of trying to get 80 BCM into European storage by the 1st of November is theoretically realizable, but of course we have to remember that the market situation this summer is really rather different to that when we were trying to replenish storage in 2017 or 18.
Okay, so I mean, relatively good news on the supply side then, and on the storage side, but obviously all becomes completely irrelevant if the Russian gas is actually turned off. And as you have both highlighted in reports recently, you know, the storage would get us through to the start of next winter, but then we'd have nothing left. So let's move on to the latest kind of topic on everyone's mind. And Jeske, let me turn to you because, of course, President Putin has made an announcement that he wants gas exports to be paid for in rubles. So can you just start by giving us a little bit of context, remind us kind of what the demand is about, and perhaps give us a hint as to whether it's actually possible under the current contracts?
On the 23rd of March, President Putin made an announcement that the currency fall payment for Russian gas delivered to foreign buyers in so-called unfriendly countries will be changed to rubles. A decree published last week on Thursday, on the 31st of March, establishes a procedure, a special procedure for what is in essence ruble payments. And this procedure applies for deliveries of gas from the 1st of April. And this procedure, of course, is something that would need to be compared with arrangements that feature in gas supply contracts.
So if I understand correctly, and you're publishing a note on this in a couple of days' time, but current gas supply contracts very much specify the currency for valuation and for payment and for invoicing. And then that is sort of very much fixed in the contracts.
Absolutely. There is a currency of the contract price, currency for invoicing, and currency for payment. And all those aspects are typically specified in gas supply contracts. And for contracts that deliver gas in Europe, there is no indication that any of those contracts is denominated in rubles. So what the decree here establishes is a major change. And this change will be for sure subject of a heavy debate that follows.
So again, from what I've been reading, the change has been somewhat mitigated by President Putin and others explaining that there's a process for the transaction to take place and that, in a sense, European customers can continue to pay in euros. Could you just explain the process and what it actually involves?
Indeed, that's a very important point. So the special procedure is, in essence, a multi-step process that involves a couple of transfers before the payment is made. But the decree is clear that the fulfillment of payment is when the payment reaches Gazprom's bank, and this happens in rubles. So it needs to be made clear that the payment for gas under the decree is in rubles. With the first transfer that the buyer will make in euros or dollars, depending on the wording of the contract, the buyer will only initiate a complex payment process that will lead to the payment for gas in rubles.
So the buyer pays in euros or dollars, as I understand it, into Gazprom Bank, who then essentially fulfill the transfer into rubles and then pay the ruble amount into Gazprom's account effectively. Is that correct?
Indeed. So the buyer in the first place is required to open an account, is required to apply to open an account to Gazprom Bank. Those will be two special accounts, K-type accounts. And the first transfer that the buyer makes in euros or dollars is to the buyer's own account. From there, Gazprom Bank will take the foreign currency to Moscow Exchange, then the currency will be changed to rubles. The next step in the payment process will mean that the rubles will be transferred to buyer's second account. From there, as the last step in the process, the funds will be transferred to Gazprom's account. But that everything happens within Gazprom Bank because buyer's accounts are in Gazprom Bank.
And so effectively, again, correct me if I'm wrong, the buyer, although they pay in euros or dollars, loses control of the transaction at some point. And therefore, the contract is, even in a small way, changed and the level of risk is increased. Is that right?
So the payment is executed in rubles at the very last process. So with the first, at the very last stage in the process, with the first transfer, buyer only initiate that process. And since that process is executed by Gazprom Bank, then indeed, buyer would not have any influence over that process, which exposes the buyer to risks that have not been envisioned by the contract. The decree allows the buyer to transfer its payment obligation to another person. So effectively, the decree forces the buyer to transfer that obligation to Gazprom Bank.
So essentially, this is something that in a normal world would be negotiated, but in this world has been mandated by President Putin, effectively. And that is grounds for the buyer to refuse, I guess.
Absolutely. So that's an extraordinary situation where a domestic legal act imposes obligations on a foreign buyer, and those obligations might be in contradiction with what state gas supply contracts. So it will be an assessment to be made on a case-specific basis, but there is a scope for friction and contradiction that could follow.
So essentially, it appears like a fairly minor thing to ask because the buyer is still paying in euros or dollars and Gazprom's getting their money in rubles, and it all seems to be fairly simple. But in essence, there is essentially a breach of contract going on here, which the buyer could certainly complain about and want to negotiate.
I wouldn't say that it's a minor thing to ask, and actually nobody is asking anything. It's a requirement that is imposed on the buyer. It's not an invitation for a negotiation with Gazprom Bank. It's a requirement imposed by a legal act, and there is a clear contradiction with the wording of at least some of the contracts that would say that the payment shall be made in euros or dollars.
Okay. So another thing I wanted to ask you about was, I believe that there's the possibility of exemptions. Is that correct? And if so, do we have any idea on what grounds those exemptions might be granted?
That's correct. At Section 9, the decree will allow for exemptions to be granted from the fulfillment of the procedure, but it does not specify the process for permits to be issued by the Investment Commission to that effect. But this is an important point. It is possible to be exempted from the procedure. And here we should add what is the consequence for non-compliance with the procedure. And this is, I believe, the most important aspect to discuss, because the consequence imposed by the decree is the right of customs authority to ban delivery of gas to the foreign buyer who fails to comply with the procedure, with the multi-step complicated process that we have just discussed under the decree.
So it's the customs authority who would then essentially forbid Gazprom from exporting the gas if the buyer had not fulfilled the demand, if you like, that essentially the Russian authorities have placed upon them.
That's correct. And this changes the narrative of the discussion, because we are no longer talking about Gazprom, who might stop deliveries as a result of its perceived failure of the buyer to fulfill the wording of the contract. It is a decision to be made by customs authority under the decree, and this decision will be imposed on both Gazprom and foreign supplier in question.
So effectively, is that giving Gazprom the right to declare force majeure, or in fact insisting that Gazprom declare force majeure if the schedule is not met?
Potentially, yes. If a delivery ban is imposed by customs authority and this happens beyond Gazprom's control, then there is a scope for Gazprom to claim that it's an act of government beyond of its control and an event of force majeure. And this means that buyers would be excused from liability for non-performance of its delivery obligation under the relevant gas supply contract.
Okay, so Gazprom essentially would be excused from delivering gas to the buyers in Europe.
So potentially.
So final question then for you, because that's a very clear explanation of what actually is happening. What do you make of the reaction in Europe so far from buyers and buyer governments? There's been various reactions from Italy, Germany, and France. Are they all of one mind, or are there different views?
So we have very few comments so far, because the decree was published on Thursday and now it's Monday and the weekend was in between. But what we have heard already is that Slovak energy minister said that they would pay for gas in rubles if it's what it takes to keep gas flowing. We have had comments from German and French officials describing the demand as blackmail. And we had initial statements from the EU that signal unity in terms of response to that demand.
Okay, well, it's a rapidly evolving situation. And of course, as you say, we've had a weekend in the way, so we'll have to wait and see what happens next. So just a reminder, this is recording this on April the 4th. I'm sure we'll be back in the not too distant future, and we'll probably have some conclusions by then. So without further ado, I think we've run out of time. So Mike, Jack, Agnieszka, thank you very much indeed for the discussion, particularly Agnieszka, for your very clear exposition on the whole question of ruble payment. If you want to read more of our research on this topic, then please do go to our website, where there are a number of papers that have already been written since February the 24th on the impact of the Russia-Ukraine crisis on energy markets. And of course, you'll find the rest of our research from the oil, gas, China and energy transition programs there as well. But without further ado, thank you very much indeed for listening. Stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.